Testing. Hello and welcome to the Stress Sessions podcast. I'm Luke, your host for the evening. I'm a bit fucking nervous. Thank you, everybody. I honestly didn't think you'd be this awesome. Thank you so much for coming. When I started this podcast, I didn't. When I started doing the podcast, I didn't realise that it would grow this much to be able to do the show, to be able to put something like this on. So for people that have listened to this or haven't listened to this, thank you so much for your support. I couldn't have done it without you. And I hope you have a lovely evening, because I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And the guests that I've got planned to come on, I've handpicked because they're great people. And I can't wait to speak to them. So, without further ado, I hope he's waiting outside. It is Will Webster! Where are you, Will? He's had another beer. He's just sorting his mic out.
Hello.
It's Will Webster!
Sorry. He said 5 minutes!
I didn't talk to him.
Because I'm doing a speech, so I was like, okay, I've got 5 minutes here. But yeah, it's a quick one. Hello, everyone. Hi.
How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Good.
That's it,
it's all done now. Thank you for listening to the Stress Session.
Thanks for that.
So for the people in the audience that haven't seen The Traitors and who might not know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about you?
About me or The Traitors?
About you, all about you.
Oh, okay. I don't know where to start. Like, do I start, like, what, from the beginning? We're going to be here a long time, man.
Just do The Traitors, then, yeah.
Just do The Traitors. Yeah, so I started doing, so I worked for charities for a really long time. I was the manager of fundraising for Cancer Research UK. Presumably I'm at Cancer Research UK, I'm guessing. And I did that for a very, really, really long time. And then I started doing social media out of boredom. I started doing TikTok. No, I did not do them dances. All that, I didn't do none of that. I was just chatting rubbish. So remember, like, I'd be on there going, oh, do you remember when you was in school in year 7 and you'd pretend to get lost and just turn up late all the time, that sort of content, which went really big. I got accumulated a quarter of a million followers, and then I get a call. I'm like, oh, who's this? I don't even know how they got my number. Now I just thought about it, I have no idea how they got my number. I get a call from Studio Lambert. They're like, would you like to be on The Circle? Yeah, not The Traitors. Have you seen The Circle?
Yeah.
So it was season 3, they were like, would you like to be on The Circle? I was like, I like The Circle, yeah, okay, cool. So they moved me to Manchester for a month. I lived with a chaperone and we just drank beer and ate beef for a month. They gave us £70 a day for food. So we was like, let's just buy loads of steaks from Sainsbury's. And that was it. And then every day we just eat beef and get drunk. And then they came in, it was like, I left for a month. They came in and were like, sorry, we're not going to use you. I swear. And I was like,
question,
like,
how did that affect your mental health?
Oh yeah, massively. Honestly, I literally was thinking, I don't even want to do social media anymore. It really did, now you say it, really did. I make a joke out of it, but at the time, I was like, oh my God, it's not going to happen. Then I went home and sat there and my wife's like, how are you? Like, well, I haven't seen you for a month. You know what I mean? I haven't seen my kids. I could FaceTime. But that was really it. So I was away for a month. Obviously, they pay you for your loss of earnings, they call it. And then, luckily, it was the same production company that made The Traitors. So I was already on the books, basically. I was already there. And then I get a call, a year later, saying, do you want to be on a show? I was like, oh, mate, I'm not doing this again. Where is it? Scotland? What, I'm going to live in Scotland for a month? Do you say no? And they're like, no, you're on. And it was literally as simple as that. I had to do the psychiatric tests and all of, because really, obviously, if you've seen the show, it's quite intense, right? So you go through all these rigorous sort of tests, and you have hours of speaking to a psychotherapist, and yeah, and then obviously I got on the show and did pretty well, changed my life, and then now I'm here, like, yeah, that's it, like, yeah.
Thanks for being here. So you finished the Traitors, and obviously that was quite a, it was obviously a game, wasn't it? And it was a mind game, essentially. So you was having to play mind games against other people. And you being a traitor, the final traitor, you had to play a lot of mind games. So that must have been pretty difficult at times, I guess.
Yeah, so for me, I asked BBC this. So I talked to BBC a lot because... Yeah, I just do, because I'm involved in other projects and stuff. So I just asked them, I was like, why did you make me a traitor? And they said, because you've worked for charity for so long, but you're really competitive, you'll do anything to win, we're going to see that on screen. And I was like, yeah, cheers for messing up my mental health. Like, cheers for that. But yeah, it was a game, and I had to, when I went in there, so the room I was staying in, I had like an A1 poster with It's Just a Game on it. I also had t-shirts printed with It's Just a Game on it, but printed backwards so I could see it in the mirror. So every time I got home, I just put it on and just like keep telling myself it's a game. And I kept telling myself these people are holiday friends. You know, you have their friends on holiday, me, and then you sort of like, yeah, we're best friends. And then like 2 months later, like, you like, hi, how are you? Good. You? Good. What have you been up to? Not much. You? Not much. And that's it. Like, I thought that was the case, but it's not. Like, we are all really close. Like, some more than others, but yeah, it really did have an effect. And watching people shout at each other, and you know you're the reason for it, that was really difficult to watch, especially at the round table when everyone's like, I think you're the traitor, and you're just sitting there like, oh my god, I've caused these people to feel really emotional and bad. That was hard for me. I cried a lot, if you didn't watch it. I cried a lot. And everyone was like, your acting was so good, like that. Like, my acting, like, I was crying a lot.
I don't know who's watching Traitors here, but I can't remember what the lady's name was that kept calling out, and she called you out since
Maddie.
Like, yeah, Maddie, that literally the week one, she was on Will constantly. Every time they ran around the table, it's like, I think it's Will. Like, every single time. How did that feel? Because did that sort of mess with your head a little bit?
Honestly, mate, like, do you know what? Like, we were filming till like 3 a.m, the Traitors, because we have to do... Mate, that'd be walking through a forest with a lantern at 2 a.m. Like, and like, can you do that again? But like, look up a little bit. And I've never wore a dress, right? And the cloak was a dress. So I don't know how women do it. Like, you know, I kept like tripping over it and stuff, so I had to do it again. Like, every night I was tripping over this cloak, like... And then, yeah, I fell asleep. So Hannah was like really good friends with Hannah from the show. So we had a nap, yeah? And Maddie comes in, they've been up all night murdering. And I'm like, I can't even sink. I can't even have a nap. Like, she was just on me. At one point, I was like, I think I might be being bullied. it was really intense, yeah.
And we spoke about this because Will's been on the podcast already. And the reason why I asked you back is because I thought we had such a good chat. And you're a lovely bloke, obviously. But you've been on quite a difficult mental health journey yourself, haven't you? And do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so my mental health started when I was pretty young. Like, well, I say young. My life started quite difficult. So when I was born, my dad got 15 years in prison. Like, but he only did 8. He didn't murder anyone. Yeah, he was like, wonder what that was. No, he didn't. And then I lived in Liverpool. Unfortunately, my mum wasn't in a place to be able to take care of us, so we lived in... I say care, but they class it as care when you live with different family members, so I went to like 9 different primary schools. And I still go to counselling now, and something that my counsellor says to me now, she's like, you're so good at talking to people because you went to so many different primary schools, you have to make friends really quickly. So it's, look at it as a positive. So it's a positive that I went through that because it's enabled me to be able to make relationships with people quite quickly, get to know people. And then sort of, I was a really aggressive teenager. Like, I was a boxer. I was doing really well in the boxing. Like, in terms of, like, I won the Golden Gloves, which is like the British Championships. I did really well. But it weren't the right outlet for me. Like, and I started fighting a lot in school. I got excluded permanently for having a fight with a teacher. Like, it's so embarrassing. Like, and I was perm excluded. My dad made me, I was a labourer for my dad, like, and he didn't pay me. I'm pretty sure that's illegal, but like, I ended up being a labourer for my dad in year nine. And then they knocked down the school and built a new school. And then when they built the new school, my dad begged for me to go back, and they let me back. And I discovered dance, drama, that sort of stuff, and I loved it. And that was a better, more positive outlet for me. And then I just was never naughty again. And then my real mental health struggles started in school. So, like I said, I lived in care and stuff. So I lived with my nan a lot. And my granddad. My granddad passed away literally during my GCSE. So I was in maths GCSE, like doing my maths GCSE. They come up to me right at the end, like, can we have a word? And I'm like, oh no, I'm getting excluded. I haven't done anything. And they're like, your granddad's passed away. And like, it was a shock. And do you know what? The school was so good. Like, they paid an invigilator to come one-on-one with me and use their teacher's office to do the rest of my exams. So I was really lucky. And then during year 12. So, like, my first year of sixth form, my nan got really sick. So I moved in with her and became her full-time carer. So, like, at lunchtime, my dance teacher used to take me to the home to take her toilet and feed her and look after her, basically, and give her the medication, and I'd go back to school, and then I'd do that, and I'd live with her, and I'd do it all night. And then, like, I remember when she died, it was like, I felt so nice. I can't explain it. Like, it's the saddest part of my life, but at the same time, it was like, I'd literally give back to what you did for me. You know, she looked after me when no one else could, really. And then that was really difficult. So I didn't really understand mental health then. I was sort of like, I'd get sad a lot. And I thought it was just because I was a teenager. Like, you know, when you're a teenager, you like to listen to a bit of Coldplay and cry for no reason. Like, and you're like, I'll feel better after. And then during the next year, so in the last year of last year of sixth form, I was upstairs, and I remember it so vividly. I was upstairs, and I just come back from the gym with my dad, and I heard my dad crying. My dad's an ex-professional boxer. Like, just doesn't show emotion, like, at all. Like, he's like, why are you crying? Like, do you know what I mean? Sort yourself out. Like, I heard him cry, and I ran downstairs, and he was like, your brother's dead. And then, like, yeah, and that was really difficult for me, because, like, like, I think with grandparents, you sort of expect it at some point, and then when it's a sibling, that's when it comes really, really hard. And then I got on antidepressants, went through multiple different antidepressants to find the right one, didn't ever find the right one. I stayed with my brother, moved out with my dad, because my dad and his wife were, like, I think my dad had a bit of a breakdown, but didn't show it in the right way. He was just always angry, so I was like, I'm getting out of here. Moved in my brother, and he found the antidepressants. He was like, you don't need them, you've got me. And then he held me, and then I was fine. But I think they made me worse at points. They made me more paranoid. And that's really when my mental health problems sort of kicked in. Like, from then on, I had depression. I still go through waves of depression now. But that's where the journey started. And so that's the beginning of my...
But look at you now, and look, like, if you could look forward back then and sort of see what you've grown to and how successful you've been, and again, like, what a lovely guy you've grown into, like, you'd be proud, man, and like, so your family, like, everybody be proud. But you said that you did the your dancing and boxing. What stuff do you do now to sort of help your mental health? Is there anything in particular you do to sort of just level yourself? And
yeah, so I think just having a wife helps. Like, my wife's my best mate, you know, like, she understands me, and she's the only one that, like, no, I wouldn't say the only one I open up to, that's a lie, but she fully understands me. She understands that if I do this, that means I'm anxious, so she knows my little tics. And then everyone's like, well, how can you trust him after that show? She's like, I know all his little tricks, man. Like, you know what I mean? I know everything he does, do you know what I mean? So yeah, she's really supported me. Like, she's my best friend. And then I think just being active, like, I recently got diagnosed with ADHD, and that really sort of, like, helped, because it's like, okay, that's why I'm so scatty, and I want to, like, I can't sit still and whatever. And I feel, yeah, I just stay active. I do a lot of social media. I know social media is, like, a bit of a stigma at times. People are like, oh, it's not great. But for me, editing videos and going out in the public and chatting to people and doing interviews in public, like, really helps, you know, being creative. For me, social media, apart from being on my phone all the time, I hate it. Like, that's the only thing. I'm like, I'm on my phone, get off it. Me and my wife bought we went to TK Maxx, as you do for the last minute Christmas gifts. Like, I was like, oh, what do I buy it? And we found a phone jail, so it's like a little jail you put your phone in. So certain days or nights, we'll put our phones in there and then just do that. But for me, it's finding something that you enjoy, that takes your mind off how you're feeling. And I was saying this to Luke earlier. I was walking to the shop the other day, and it was late at night, it was dark, and I seen this, you know when you got like a field and a path, and then you have lampposts, and I was walking, and I could see my shadow, because the light behind me, and then it disappears, and then you see it, and then it disappears, and I was just like, that's me, like, my mental health. Like, I don't feel you'll ever get rid of your bad mental health. I think it's just you learn to sort of find your ways of dealing with it. So yeah, I'm still not perfect, still nowhere near it. I'm still figuring out certain things.
I totally agree. I think everybody always is. I think it's finding that thing that fits you. And you mentioned your wife. She doesn't get really embarrassed now, but I would not be here today if my wife hadn't helped me out probably 7 years ago. I don't want to get emotional. But I would not be here because she was the one that said, like, She helped me through. She helped me through those dark days, and like we wouldn't be sitting here now. It's the people that you meet that help you, and it's the stuff that you do. Like, you do the things that help your mental health. So I know there's people in the audience today, like, that have been part of run clubs that I've done and swimming clubs that I've been to, and people I've worked with, and thank you all. You've, like, family. So thank you. It's the people that you meet that guide you along the way, and the hobbies that you take up, I think, that kind of help that.
Yeah, 100%. It's important to, like, have hobbies and be able to talk. I think, like, I've always talked about my childhood and everything. I think it's my way of dealing with it, like, making a joke out of it and stuff. But then at some point you have to really come to terms with actually what's happened. So, like, I was getting drunk with my dad, like, and I just sat there and went, why was my childhood so shit? I was like, I've got the courage, I'm doing it. Why was it so shit? And he was just like, I'm sorry, and got really upset. And I was like, alright. Like, do you know what I mean? But it took a weight off my shoulder. It was like, I always wanted to ask that question. And it was because his dad was violent towards him, he wasn't very nice to him, and I feel like that sort of, it transcribed to our life, really. Yeah, he was a hard person to live with.
I sort of, I don't know how you feel a little bit about that one, but let's not go into that right now. That's for another day. So going back to your career now, you've obviously, we're talking backstage about kind of your mainly our content creator. You went to the NTAs the other day, which is massive.
Yeah.
And what's that like, transitioning from, like, going from a full-time job into, like, somebody that's in the public eye, getting recognised everywhere? And you said, like, you go out now and you just get bombarded by people. What's that like?
I had imposter syndrome at the beginning, so, like, when it first came out, like, I had COVID when it actually came out, so I didn't go in public or anything like that, and then it was the day of the final, I was like, I actually need to go do Christmas shopping. I haven't left the house for, like, since the show was in, and I went out and it was just, like, everyone taking pictures, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then over time, it's great. I really like it because you people enjoy it and they get happy when they see you, so it's nice. But then, like, about a month ago, I had this, like, mental health, like, I wouldn't say a breakdown because it weren't that extreme, but it was the fact that I knew I was going on holiday to Croatia, I knew I was going to a country and no one would know me. And like the week before, I was just like, I can't wait till next week. I'm just not going to leave my house. I just can't face it. Like it's really good, but at the same time, it's like I've had it for like 6-7 months, and everyone's like, has it calmed down? I'm like, not really. Like I live in London, so it's like, you know, they're busy everywhere. And once someone stops, multiple people stop, and it, like, I do enjoy it. It's really good, but the mental health side of it, we're really lucky because we've got a guy called Gareth. So he's the psychiatrist on The Traitors, and he was the psychiatrist on Big Brother, and we can call him whenever we want. And BBC pay for it, so like if I ever need extra counselling or need to chat to someone, he understands it more than anyone because he's basically a counsellor for people that are recognised or famous people. Like, but yeah, my life's been good after, but I do have my own challenges at times. Like sometimes you feel like you're not good enough, you know. Yeah, it's like, why, I'm just here because I lie to people on TV. Like, you know what I mean? But everyone's like, yeah, but it's who you are. It's what you, like, it's who you are as a person. You're outgoing and whatever. And then you start realising, actually, I probably should be here. But, yeah.
Because you're on The Traitors, did you, I've not got this question written down, but it just popped into my head. But when you're on The Traitors and you came out and it obviously aired, and you went through all of that mind gamey sort of experience, do people ask you about, like, do they ask for mental health tips and stuff like that, or do you not really get that?
It's so strange because, like, I've worked for charity a long time, but mental health has been something that is really close to my heart, just for the fact of, like, I know I've dealt with it, and I know so many of my friends have gone through stuff, but they just never, you know, when someone's going through something and you know they're going through something, but they just don't say anything. So, like, I've always tried to reach out to my friends and support them. But after The Traitors, I've done a lot for certain charities, but I don't post all over my socials, so it's like, I don't believe in this fake, like, oh, look, I'm helping this charity, like, that's just not who I am. So, like, I worked on Comic Relief, and I went and did a VT for the Octopus Foundation, so they help men with mental health by, like, what they do is they build things. So you go there and you make things out of wood, and they just, like, carpentry and stuff, and then men end up just talking about their feelings and stuff, and it was really good. So I go back there all the time, but I just don't post it, because I'm like, it's something that I'm interested in helping. So I've become a patron of that charity, and it means a lot to me, and another charity as well. But yeah, so I do get people asking me, like, about my mental health, because they can obviously see it was really bad, like, really hard and challenging when we was there.
And what, if even when people do give, or ask about certain mental health aspects and help for that, what would you kind of, what advice would you give them?
Strange question, isn't it? Strange one, isn't it? It's a weird question, because do you know why it's weird? Because you don't get men asking.
No.
So I can't answer your question, really. Like, no, it's true. Like, I don't think I've ever had a man come up to me and say, look, I'm going through this. Have you got any advice? I don't know why we don't, it's a weird thing, so I can't really ask you a question, because I've never really had somebody come up to me and ask for advice from me directly. It's like through a charity or something like that, but I've never really had anybody, like a friend or someone, just come up to me and be like, oh, how would you deal with it? So yeah, sorry. Like, that was the worst.
Oh,
right. I thought you were going to give me a solution to the problem, mate.
I do think that we're getting into a place though where it's a lot better than it used to be. And I know there's lots of amazing groups out there, amazing charities that help men. It is getting better. Do you see that, or do you think it's sort of a bit stuck still? Because my perspective is, during that difficult pandemic period.
Whispering pandemic.
Yeah. Everybody's very nice to each other and, like, welcoming and, like, quite caring. Whereas I feel like now it's gone back the other way again. Do you think that men's mental health is spoken about enough? Do you think it needs to be spoken about more?
Yeah, more. All the time. It needs to be spoken about a lot. And I feel like it's not our sort of age category I worry about the most. It's people of my dad's age, like in their 50s and 60s. It's just something that just doesn't exist in their sort of time. It's But my dad just doesn't talk. And you hear it in his voice when he's upset sometimes. You can hear it. And then he'll just brush it off. So I feel like for youngish people like us, yeah, so, and younger generation, they'll, sorry, they'll get, they'll, the more we talk about it, the better it'll get. I feel like it's not impossible, but it's a very hard generation. Like, over 40s, over 50s, it's very hard for a man to open up because they're so used to not. So I feel like the more we talk about it now, it's only going to get better for the younger generations. The older generation, it's like there needs to be more people that have higher profiles talking about it as an older man. I think that would help with that. But not like Richard Ambrose, someone like that. Like, it needs to be someone who's been through some shit. It needs to be someone high profile who's been through a hard time. Like, I know Danny Dyer, like, I know he talks a lot about mental health at the moment, which is good because it's like that sort of audience. And when I chat to him, he's like, we talk about it quite a lot. So he's like, obviously had a bit of an issue with alcohol and stuff. And from Ant and Deck, he's similar as well. He talks a lot about it, which is good.
I do think it's getting better, but going back to when I first started this podcast, I've never opened up about my mental health. And the first episode I did was with my wife. And then, again, like, my mate, best mate there, Martin, he was my first guest that wasn't my wife on this podcast. And we'd never spoken about it before, had we? We'd never opened up, and we were literally hit record. I don't know how we recorded, I think it was on the phone, wasn't it? We phoned each other on WhatsApp and just recorded it like that. But that was the first time I'd ever spoken to, like, a friend about that. And I mean, again, if we wouldn't have gone into lockdown, I don't think I'd have started this. I don't think I'd have opened up. I probably would have kept going downhill. So, got a lot of people to thank for, and it's, again, going back to the people opening up themselves and sort of helping you along that journey, I think.
Yeah, it's really important. Like, people mirror each other in life. People mirror people's actions. So if you open up to someone, I know it's hard for you to make that step. If you go up to someone and go, "How's your mental health?" Yeah, it's like, that's a bit too much, man.
It's like yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, you're like, "Yeah, I'm right, mate." Yeah, that's the response you'll get. Yeah, it's all really good. But if you open up to someone, they're most likely to mirror that than what it is if you just ask them. So that's why I think it's important for you to like. To try, I know it's a really difficult thing to do, to just be like, do you know what, if I do it, maybe they'll give me some advice, because they might have gone through something, and then they'll tell me their story, and then everyone shares stories, and when you share stories, you realise you're not the only one who has this balloon that lives here. That's how I describe it, like this balloon that lives here. If I'm anxious, it just feels like something's sitting here, and yeah, we're all normal, like, I try to be, but like, you know, it is a normal thing, and... Yeah, opening up to allow people to open up back instead of just questioning people. I think doctors need to do it, man. They don't know. They need to tell us about their mental health, and then we'll be better at giving it to them. You know what I mean? But yeah,
it's kind of a bit like, so we're all chatting out there in the little room,
green room.
And Rich, who's coming on later, was saying that we all suffer at some point. Like everybody. Everybody in this room has suffered or will suffer with their mental health at some point. And we just need to be more open about it and just be like, look, I'm struggling at the minute. I'm having a hard time. And the more people that say that openly, the more normal it'll be. And it just creates a better life for everybody, essentially.
Yeah. Well, it's like, realistically, having a cry and talking to your friend is... you feel relieved. I don't know if anybody's ever felt something where you're feeling really down and you have that really big cry where you open up to someone and you're like, oh, I feel so much better about that. Like, if there was more of that and not, like, I just feel like you go to the doctors at the moment, you need support. They're like, have you tried this drug? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And sometimes it is a chemical imbalance in your brain. Like, so it's understandable if you need to take certain medication to help stable that. But at the same time, like counselling is really important. I think counselling like changed my life, and I pay for it. I've paid for it since I was 17 years old. So I had a school counsellor, because when my granddad died, they gave me school counselling. But then when I left school, or when I was, no, I was about 17, she left the school. So I ended up paying, like, because she knew everything about my life. So I was like, I still go to the same person now. She's seen me literally grow up. But when you go on the NHS waiting list, like, to see any kind of counsellor, it's so long. Like, and in that time, how many people are gonna commit suicide or gonna be close to committing suicide? Like, I know if I weren't such a pussy, I would be dead right now. Like, that's how I feel. Like, there's been times where I'm like, I really want to die right now. And if I had the balls and the bottle to do it, I would have done it. But I didn't. I'm fortunate that I didn't, because I would have had the life I'm having, or kids and a wife and stuff. But if you don't have them points where you hit rock bottom, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's a weird one.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how to respond to that.
Yeah, so this is the theme of the night. I don't know how to respond to that, mate. So, anyone
else? Moving on. No, it's true, though. I feel like when you do hit rock bottom and you're right down there and you feel proper shit, like proper shit, it's hard. And it, I could go back to it again. It's the people that pull you through, and it's what it's at that point that you can't get any lower, that you can only go up, I think.
Yeah, it's weird, because like I suffer from, like, I see it's two different things. So you have depression and anxiety, and I see them as completely different things. Like, when I'm anxious, I stay in bed. Like, I'm like, if I sleep, I don't feel this anymore. Like, the anxiety of doing whatever I'm doing in my life. And then with depression, I shut off. Like, I shut myself away from my kids and my wife if I go through that little phase. But she's the one who knows how to deal with it. Like, my wife's the one that comes in and is like, chats to me and whatever. And I can be open with her and tell her exactly how I'm feeling. And because I've had so many deaths in the family, there's always an anniversary or always a birthday. Like, so when them times come up and you're like, and it sounds so strange, but I'm glad my wife wasn't there when all these things happened, because you end up in that circle. So I remember when my brother died, and it was like, I went to school the next day because I couldn't be around my family. It was just a circle of sadness, and I had to be out of it for a bit. And I'm glad my wife wasn't there to see, even though I was going through such hard times, I probably could have needed her. But at the same time, when I'm upset, she doesn't have that same sort of grieving feeling that I have. So it's like someone fresh who can think about things logically and not just impulsively, like crying or whatever. She can be there to support me.
And I've just been given the couple of minutes warning, so...
Couple of minutes.
What's... If there's somebody suffering in this room with their mental health for the minute, what's, again, I don't even know if you have to answer this, but what's the one tip that you give them right now at this point, as Will Webster?
Ooh. Just don't give up. Like, don't give up. Like, it is, I'll never tell you that, like, your mental health will be perfect or you'll get over it, because you won't. I'm really sorry. Probably shouldn't have said that, but it will always come back. Like, I don't think it's something that would disappear forever, like I said earlier. It's something that stays within you. You just learn how to... Like, I know if I feel stuck going through a depressed period, I go to the gym, start trying to look after myself a bit more, eating healthier food, and then all of a sudden I feel a bit better about myself. And, yeah, it's just that. I feel the tip is just don't give up. Just carry on and open up and talk to someone who's close to you.
Thanks, mate.
No problem.
And that has been Will Webster for the second time on the Stress Sessions. Thank you very much. We're going to take a very short break for about 10 to 15 minutes, so please feel free to go and get a drink and or just sit there, do what you want. Cheers. See you in a bit.
I think it's off. Is it off? Is it off?
testing. Hello and welcome back to the Stress Sessions podcast. I want beers now. Yeah, it's special shout out to Athletic Brain for sponsoring the event. Thank you very much. How's Frank? Good Frank? Yeah. Lovely. So, my next guest is, he's waiting in the wings, he's eyeing me up. No, not Will's. So, my next guest is the amazing, he's fucking hilarious, Rich Wilson! Hello everyone, you good?
Yeah.
Hello, lovely. Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, nice. Is that the walk-on music?
That was walk-on music.
Yeah,
wicked. I didn't ask you what your favourite song was, so I just picked it because you saw the Hives racing thing, so I was like, oh, why not?
The Hives, anyone seen them? Anyone know who they are? Yeah. What a band. Anyway, enough about them.
So,
mental health.
Mental health. So, let's start at the beginning. You're a comedian.
Yes. Sometimes.
For those people who don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of background on yourself?
My name's Rich. I've been a comedian for 19 years. So I've travelled around the world making people laugh. That's what I do for a living. And then about 4 years ago, we started a podcast called Insane in the Membrane, where we talk to funny and interesting people about mental health, but in a way that's like two friends sitting in a coffee shop or a pub. That's how we do it. So had a laugh about some pretty dark things. And we found that humour was the best way to talk about these things. Like I said, we've talked about some pretty dark stuff on the podcast. And, you know, in a way that it can be triggering to some people, and so we are careful, but I think joking about these things is the way forward, you know. Like I said to you in the green room, Ishan Akbar was telling me about when he tried to commit suicide, and it was one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. What a weird thing to say, you know. The way he told it, I don't know if anyone's had a similar experience. And I'm sorry that he got to that point, and I'm glad you're still here. The way Ishan was saying that, well, because he tried to throw himself in front of a train, and he said what he didn't take into account was velocity, physics, right? And he just said the train was coming at such a rate that when he decided, oh, I'm going to do it, and he left the platform, and he thought that was going to be it, he suddenly woke up, and he's on the platform again, surrounded by people. He's like, how the fuck did I manage that? Like, he thought he was in heaven for a minute. Like, maybe heaven's the platform too at Enfield, whatever it is. And then he suddenly came to us, oh God, and he felt sick, he ran home. And then, like I say, so that's a pretty dark story, but talking about it in that way helps other people talk about it as well, you know. It's sad that people get to that point where they think there's no other option. But I'm here to tell you now, there is always an option. There's always an option. There's always someone to talk to. And that's why we do the podcast. So we've managed to mash the fact that the comedy and the mental health chat together, and it works really well. So, yeah, it's been good.
It does work really well.
It does.
Yeah, what was the thinking behind it to begin with? So, like, was there, like, a specific reason why you started Insane in the Membrane? Was it, like because you've experienced bad, poor mental health in the past, or is it like just to start opening the conversation? Was there a specific reason?
It was an amalgamation of everything. It was I'd been through counselling myself, and I think the hardest thing when you've experienced poor mental health, the hardest thing is admitting that some of it was your fault. Right, there was behaviours that I was doing in relationships, especially, you know, admitting that you'd been a bit of a dick. You know, you weren't, cheating on partners, and you're like, right, why am I doing that? If it's upsetting me to be doing that, why am I doing it? Why am I upsetting other people? And it's that self-reflection which is the hardest bit. So if you get to a point, you go, this is my fault, where do I go from here? And that's where it sort of started. So I already had that in my head, that I want to start, because I was in a green room with Milo McKay, who's the character Troy Hawk. I don't know if you've seen him, you know, the Greeters Guild sounds like Saul Wilkinson's in a smoking jacket. Know that fella? Brilliant. So he's actually a trained psychoanalyst, I think. And I walked into a green room one day, he was there, and he goes, "How are you?" And I actually told him how I was. I actually said to him, "Well, I've been having counselling." And he was like, "Well, I thought you were sorted." And I was like, "Mate, you have no idea." We had this conversation. And so from that, it kind of came from that. And then, you know, and then everyone, I did hardcore listenings with Stu and Chris. And afterwards, Brad Acton, who was there, who was in a work with him, and he messaged me and said, "You should do a podcast yourself." He said, "There's going to be a big wave and everyone's going to be doing podcasts soon. So you want to get on that bandwagon before it blows up." So then so that was in my head. And I didn't really know what the podcast was going to be about. And then Brad came over to my flat and we were chatting about what it was going to be, what we could do. And he and I were having a conversation. And then he started telling me some stuff that he said afterwards. He goes, "I've never told anyone this before." He goes, "You're so easy to talk to. Why don't we do a podcast about men's mental health, getting men to open up?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so. I think." And he kind of came back. And one day I was sitting on my bed. I'd been out, I was getting ready for a gig. And I was just drying off. And I was sitting on the bed. And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, Insane in the Membrane." Because he's a misheard lyric from Cypress Hill. And I remember, honestly, laid back on the bed. I'm like, "Fuck the gig. I'm not going. I've already smashed it. I've already smashed it. Like, what a name. What a name." And then my phone went, "Where are you?" "Oh, yeah, I better go. Better go." So it all kind of happened organically. Nothing was forced. It all just happened. Very lucky that it did. It all just fell into place. That part, from that moment of self-reflection, going, "Right, you're the problem. Sort it out. What's going on?" To where, to like, you know, nearly 5 years in February now. And yeah, it's gone from strength to strength. And it's that, I think people respond to the honesty that's there when you go, "Yeah, I've been a dick. And so have you. So, hey, why don't we not be dicks anymore? How about that?" And then just, you know, the stuff that's been going on with Russell Brand in the news lately, you know, this week, and I've had mates messaging me going, "Oh man, I feel bad because there was this time when I was in a bar and I might have been a bit pissed and a bit handsy." And I'm like, "Yeah, everybody does that, but you didn't molest anyone." I've had those conversations this week. But is that, there's a lot of men coming forward and going, "Yeah, but was it my fault? Did I do this?" And so loads of men are now having those reflections and looking in on themselves going, "Was I a little bit too coercive when I was pissed? Was I too handsy? Was I this?" And that all comes, that's, that honesty is what makes the podcast, that my podcast, you know, that's what people click onto. Like, "Oh yeah, being honest, because you are, you can be a dick, you've all been dicks." Being dicks now. I think that's it. If you agree with that, if you go from that point, "Yeah, I've been a bit of a dick," then it's fine. There's a difference. Russell Brand hasn't been a dick, that's different. Right? That's something else entirely. Allegedly. Anyway, so.
Allegedly.
Mate, what a fucking.
That
way
comes up a little bit.
I swear, I'm
spending
well off here.
Yeah,
it's Friday night.
The Insane in the Membrane name is brilliant.
Thanks, mate.
But the feedback that I got from my fucking podcast name. So I had Perez Hilton on the end of series 4 here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he went, "The stress sessions makes me feel stressed." I was like, "Oh, for fuck's sake."
Yeah.
And he's like, "You should change it." And I was like, "I'm series 4 in, mate. I can't change it now.
You can't rebrand it now.
I'm in too deep."
Sounds like CrossFit. Yeah.
Oh, I've been there as well. CrossFit, don't do it.
No, this is not a CrossFit body. It's a fit. It's cross. Unfit body. That's what it is. Stop putting shit in your body. I can't help it, body. I found all the sweets and crisps in the room, by the way. That would be half of them.
That's what they're there for.
Tripping me nuts off now. I'll have a sugar crash in about 5 minutes. I'm like, anyway, what were we talking about? That's what I've got. Yeah. So yeah.
So when you started Insane in the Membrane, do you? So looking back to when you first started it to this point now, do you think it's helped your mental health literally by just starting that podcast, talking about your feelings, talking about what you're going through? Do you think you're less mentally unstable? But like, has your mental health improved since you started the podcast?
My mental health has definitely improved from doing the podcast. I mean, there's other stresses that come along with it, like, you know, the admin of it, like trying to, you know, get the guests on, trying to, you know, keep it interesting so people tune in every week and plugging it as well, because now we have to be our own cheerleaders. You know, like, I haven't got anyone doing my admin. I haven't got anyone doing the social media stuff. That's all me. And I have to keep plugging away. And I know it's, you know, there's people doing proper jobs. I know, right? I get it. I'm not digging holes in the floor. And I'm not a nurse having to deal with, you know, like COVID and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh no, you've got to put a picture up on Instagram. Oh, poor you. Must be so hard for you, mustn't it? Have another bottle of them. Not there. That's why I'm so showbiz now. I just got plates of bolivants just lying around.
Bolivant me, please!
Yeah, when your bolivant turns up.
That's what's in the dressing room, isn't it?
You what?
That's what's in the dressing room.
Bolivants. I haven't seen a bolivant since the 80s, to be honest.
Where is a bolivant?
Yeah, see? Now people don't even know what bolivants are. You're too busy messing around with air fryers, mate.
Let's not start that conversation. We don't own an air fryer. The amount of people that tell us to get a fucking air fryer.
Oh, man. We bought an air fryer. It's sitting in the box on top of the cupboard. And I can't reach it. I'm too short. My wife's really tall and I'm not. So she's been up top of the cupboard. And now I can't reach it. So, yeah, my mental health has improved. When did I say that? I mean, we're human beings and we are, I think our mental health struggle with it because we're wedged into this framework, the society and capitalism have put us into this framework now where, you know, we're only seen as good citizens if we've got a good credit rating and, you know, oh yeah, you're a very good person because you can borrow loads of money from us dudes in these suits and these big oak offices and we're not really like that. You know, we should be out in the fields running around and eating bolivants and having, you know, just having sex and just running around like playing our bits together. That's what we're animals fundamentally. You know, but we're not. We have to make sure we're on Zoom meetings and all that shit, don't we? So it's yes. In the grand scheme of things, my mental health is better, but every now and again I struggle with it and I think because of everything that's going on in the world, I've had to come away from it. I can't watch the news because that feeling of hopelessness when you see what's going on in Ukraine and in knowing people, friends of mine that are from Russia and they don't agree with what's going on and they're struggling with it as well because as soon as they say to people, oh yeah, I'm Russian, people just go, oh, so important. And at the end of the day, it's not us that's causing all these conflicts, it's the generals on the hill that are causing it, and it's just us trying to get by and, like I say, eat bolivants and have sex, and they're all doing things. So I've had to stop watching the news because it just makes me sad. So, yeah, doing the podcast, I can talk about these things. And through doing the podcast as well, I realise that we're all pretty much the same. We are all struggling with it, and we were peaks and troughs of happiness and sadness, and we're all struggling with this and that. We're all fundamentally pretty much the same. And that's what, and I think that's helped me understand it with the podcast. I get to talk to so many people, and loads of people message me as well. There's been this now and again. I'll go, "What's the point in this podcast? Why is anyone listening to this?" And then I'll get a message from someone, and they'll say, "You listening to you talk to whoever saved my life that week. You saved our marriage just by talking about your own failings as a partner and things like that." And it makes it worthwhile. And so, yeah, it has improved from that. And the guests that I have, what I've learned as well, the podcast isn't about me, it's about the guest. It's me learning from everybody that comes on, which is why there's some podcasts I listen to, and you're halfway through, like, can you shut up and just let the guest talk for a minute? Do you know what I mean? There's a few, I'm not going to name names, but just like, do you know what I mean? You're like, just let them talk, mate. Is that you? Is that what you're like?
No.
I was going to say, I wouldn't imagine that you'd dominate. Like, no disrespect, no. But...
I have to listen.
I mean, the podcast environment, I don't mean... You do what you do at home, mate. That's like,
bolivants.
Yeah, bolivants. Yeah, so the podcast isn't about me, it's about the guests learning from what they have to say, their experiences of life. Especially when you talk to people like Heston Blumenthal and David Baddiel and, you know, various other people that have been on, and you go, wow, you've got this extraordinary life, yet you're still dealing with, you know. I've had dinner with Heston, and he's just a dude, he's just a regular geezer that's got a guru bloke with him to stop him doing coke. So,
does this get out? Is this going out?
Yeah.
Yeah, we may cut that out.
Can you hear what you said?
Yeah. Humphrey Bogart, I was talking about. Humphrey Bogart. You don't even know who that is, do you? Jesus.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, sorry, yes, my mental health has improved.
I'll just cut into that.
Just hello, goodbye, that'd be it.
You've got some elder sons, haven't you?
I do, yeah.
As they've been growing up, I don't know how old they are, are they teenagers?
31 and 26.
So are they, because you're very open on the podcast and you have been for a long time about your mental health, do you have those conversations with them and are they happy to come to you with stuff?
Yeah, we've always been very open with the boys and to the point, I remember when they were coming of age, and I remember on and on like if you ever need to talk to me, you come to me, you know, and you know, if you want to talk to me about your sexuality or anything like that, you know, because you know this is an open door, and the world's a different place now to where it was when I was growing up, and you're able to be who you truly are. You can, if you're gay and you're struggling with it, do come to me. Right? To the point where his son just went, "Dad, for the love of God, I'm not gay." He goes, "No offense, I don't want it, Dad. I'm not. Can you just stop it?" Coming in with dresses, but you might want to wear this. He's like, "Dad, I've only got the legs for that." All right, just let you know that it could be important. It could be something you want to explore. So yeah, I've been really open with boys. But the thing you've got to remember as well is that they're individual human beings themselves. So they've got their own understanding of how things are, and there's a danger sometimes of older people looking at younger people as if, well, what do you know? You're just young. What do you know? It's like, yeah, you were that age once, and you remember what that was like. You had more of a hand on it than a lot of people do. So it's the boys have grown to be, and I'm just saying it because they're my boys, but they're top lads, and we have really decent conversations, you know, about everything. Everything's going on, especially like now with this Russell Brand shit. We were talking about that, and there was, you know. Yeah, it's, you can have these conversations because they've got their own take on things, you know, they've grown to be good lads, and that's just from just being there. You just got to be there for your kids, not necessarily, you can't really, you know, try not to download your shit into them like we had, like with our parents. They were kind of like, I remember growing up, my mum and dad are pretty chill, but I do remember adults around just going, well, you know, you don't need to worry about a career because you're just going to go to school and you're going to get a job. Doesn't matter what job, just get a job, something that pays the bills, because then you're going to get yourself a nice little house and you're going to meet someone.
A woman!
And then you're going to have a kid. So it was that shit. So it's all very sort of regimented, isn't it? But just be there for you. So like you pick out the bits that work and then you sort of like throw away the bits that didn't from your parents and their generation, and then you sort of like try and do the best you can with your kids, and just be at the end of the day, just be there for your children. That's it. That's all you got to be. Just be open to any conversation that they want to have, and that's it. That's the only bit of advice, really. Be there for your kids, and that doesn't mean giving them money or anything like that. It's just like, just be there, and they will respond to that more than you realise. Them knowing that you're there is such a secure, such a beautiful, secure thing that kids need. And that's it, just be there. And that's it. Whether you're with your partner or not, whether you split up or whatever, regardless of how you two feel about each other, it's not about that, it's about your kids, and just be there for them. And that's what I was with my kids, because we broke up. The mother there, Lisa and I, broke up years ago. And even when we were like at the point where we hated each other, we never used the boys, we never took it out on them. It was always, this is happening, mum and dad don't really get on in a minute, but I'm sure we'll figure it out. Anyway, come to me, I'm the better one, don't worry about it. Be there for your kids, that's it, yeah, that's what you can do. So, and that's what, and I see that now they've grown, and they're both 6'2". There you go.
They can reach the high stuff as well.
They can reach the high stuff.
They can reach the air fryer.
I see it with my wife and my two boys. This is, when I'm still amongst them, it's like I'm in the forest.
I'm in the trees.
Literally, that's my train of thought.
Sorry, mate. One
of the things I was going to ask you was, The first comedian I had on the stress session was Baron Vaughan from the US.
Who?
Baron Vaughan.
Oh yeah, cool.
He was very, very open, and the question that I asked him was, because I watched that Buzzsprout, is it Buzzsprout?
I can't remember.
There was basically a documentary. I probably shouldn't be asking this question, so I've forgotten about. But it's a documentary that was created by Rainn Wilson, and there's a series of comedians that basically said that they became comedians because they were depressed. Is that sort of quite a theme within the comedy circle, would you say?
I think that's there's a bit of a cliche like that. It is a bit of a cliche to say, oh, you know, we're all crying on the inside, and we're all jazz hands on the outside. It's like we're the same as everybody. Like I already said, we all at different points struggle with our mental health. Comedians, I don't know. I can't really talk for all of them. I don't really know. I just know from my experience. I got into comedy because someone said, you're quite funny, you can make some money from this. And I went, all right, I'll go and do that then. And I just sort of fell into it. I was never the class clown. I wasn't known as funny, you know, I wasn't trying to make people laugh. I was just able to do it. And then, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, I've just ricocheted through, I just did any job that came along. Left school early. When I did removals, and then someone else went, oh, they need someone in Currys, go and get a job there. So I went and got a job in Currys selling vacuum cleaners. And then I was a butcher, and then someone went, oh, they need someone at this place. And I went, yeah, I'll come to that. And then I ended up going to college to do sitting guilds, community care, to look after people. Ended up doing that. And then just kind of bing-bonged my way through life doing these jobs. And I'm working in a comedy club. Comedians were going, oh, you should do this. I've got a gig. Come and do it. And I went, yeah, fine. And then I'm here sitting with you lot. Now I'm a podcaster. I never planned that. It just kind of happened. They're like, you should do a podcast. Yeah, all right, I'll give that a bash. So I'm not really a comedian to cover up any kind of sadness. And I learned this as well, when we had the lockdowns and all of our work got taken away, I remember another comic ringing me up and he went, yeah, but we need the stage and we need the attention. And it was the first time I realised, like, I don't need the attention. I don't need to be on stage. I like being on stage because I love making people laugh. There's nothing better than when you watch someone spit their drink out. It's hilarious. You go, I did that. Taking people out of what's going on in their lives for 20 minutes or an hour or however long you're doing it. It's like this tonight. I was worried that this was going to be a bit serious. I was like, oh, we're going to talk about mental health. And now I'm sitting there, and all I want to do is make you laugh. And worked. Volavons. Who knew that was going to come out? So I don't...
You still haven't explained what Volavons is.
They're like a little pastry kind of oval... thing.
Oh, like appetizers.
Yeah. And they're like that fat, and they're like oval, and then you can put like tuna fish in them. And they're not tuna bottle. Prawn. How's it prawn? Posh up there with prawns. Working class, mate. Tuna. You were in that Pilchards, but someone nicked them.
You're in Middle Kings. It's not posh.
You were? Oh yeah, Middle Kings. Middle Kings wasn't even a place when I was a kid. You were?
They were frozen prawns.
Frozen prawns.
Oh, yes,
yeah, speak to more than knows a way around a prawn ring. Bit of class, mate. Like, oh, we've got the mother-in-law over. Get a couple of them rings out. And, you know, like, with a pineapple with them cheese and sticks.
Hedgehog.
Like a hedgehog, yeah. Ah, proper wedding, this proper wedding. We've got Clive doing the disco, he's doing that. What were we talking about?
I can't remember. I literally can't remember.
Volavons,
I'm hungry to my questions here.
Yeah, go with this.
Right, here we go.
So no, I'm not covering up any sadness, as I know. I'm just sad now and again. And I'm a comedian, it's not really connected, to be honest. So I don't go, oh my God, I'm just crying in the green room, wiping the mascara and the grease paint off my face, and I come out like, make them laugh, make them laugh. No. Some people are, though, I guess. It's up to them, it's their experience, but mine isn't really like that. I'm not really different off stage than I am on. I kind of go through my life doing what I'm doing now, having a laugh and mucking about. Now and again, I'm a bit serious, a bit moody. And then, at one point in my day, around about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, someone hands me a microphone. I carry on talking, but it's amplified now. And then I finish my time, give the microphone back, and then I just carry on talking about microphones and Clive doing the disco. So, yeah, it's very different. Sorry, questions.
This is the first question tonight I've actually looked at to ask. Well, guys, it's been freestyling. So, you've just had a TV programme come out on ITVX.
Yes.
What's that like? And obviously, like, it's a big thing to have your comedy show put out on sort of like national TV and all that. What sort of demands came with that, and how did that make you feel?
I find it quite surreal, actually. Because again, I got into comedy by accident. I kind of went, yeah, I'll go and do that. And then you get into it, and then it turns out you're pretty good at it. So then people keep booking you, and then you end up traveling the world, making people laugh, and you're like, oh, this has got to be out of hand. And then it was last year at the Edinburgh Festival, and I did have a particularly good time. The venue wasn't great. We were just coming out of lockdown, so there weren't as many people around. It was, I tried to do it in a way, I tried not to use flyers to promote the show, because I thought I'd be a bit green for the planet, like, so don't get all that paper. You need flyers. Fuck the planet, man. Honestly. Bring back plastic straws and flyers.
Plastic straws for the win.
I nearly sucked the back of my head off last night trying to get the milkshake out of the corners. Those paper straws. You're like trying to suck it for a newspaper. We're in the car, me and my wife, and I'm nearly like, I can feel the back of my head going in. I feel my arse is coming up through my seat. I suck myself inside out. So I'm really sorry, turtles. You're going to have to... Why was a turtle drinking out of a straw anyway? What's going on under the sea? You know, there's SpongeBob SquarePants having his parties, leaving a straw like Anyway, I don't know, it's quite surreal. So anyway, this really tough time in Edinburgh, and like, my lovely wife, who's a comedian as well, Kate McGann, and we were up there, and it was a stressful time, and then we sort of came away from it going, oh man, that was hard work, trying to get people in, trying to keep it going, and your mental health struggles a bit up there, because you see loads of people getting attention, and you're not getting it for your show. Everyone's like the hot new thing, hot ticket, everyone's queuing around the block, and you turn up at your show and there's nobody there. You know, oh my God, what, am I shit, am I rubbish, what is going on? And then we came away, and then nextup.com messaged me and they said, we saw your show in Edinburgh, we really liked it, we've got slot on the 4th of October and we want to film it, we want to film your show for our website. And nextup.com, pretty good, they've got loads of good stand-up comedy stuff on there. And I was like, yeah, that'd be amazing. But then I'm like, ah, oh, right. And they go, yeah, it's at the Frog and Bucket in Manchester. And we were getting married on October the 3rd. So it's October the 4th. And I had to step my wife and I had this opportunity. And this is why I love her so much, because she just went, well, yeah, we have to just do it. So we nearly went up there, we were sitting in a wedding dress. I just kind of like, you know, there's still confetti in her hair. We were going up to Manchester to do the Frog and Bucket to film this show. And it was one of those nights where it couldn't have gone better. The audience were amazing, the show flowed, it was really cool. We had such a good time. And I didn't think anything else of it. I thought, that's it, it's going to be out on this website and that'd be it. And then nextup.com were great. And then a few months ago they messaged me and they said, we've chucked a load of shows over to ITVX. And one of yours is one of the ones that they picked up. They really like it, they want to put it out. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding? They're like, nah. So then it ends up on ITVX. And now my family can suddenly see what it is I actually do. Because up until then, they had no idea. Like, what do you mean you had to leave on Tuesday just for one night? Because like, that's what we do, we just travel around making people laugh. And so now they see it, they go, yeah, that's something tangible. Now we get it. And so it's made, I've got loads of my Facebook friends, my friends from school. There's a Facebook group called I Lived on the Ramsden Estate, which is where I was when I grew up, when I was a kid. And they've been going, they're going mad about it. Oh my God, Richie, he's on the ITVX. And yeah, it's been really surreal. And then there's other people going, what's ITVX? Yeah, but it's weird. It's weird seeing my face amongst like all the others that are on there. You know, like Catherine Ryan and people like that, Mr. Bean. And then there's your fathead. in the middle with an ill-fitting jacket. And it's surreal. It's very surreal. And I don't take any of it for granted. I'm kind of like, wow, man, this is escalating quickly. So, yeah, it's nice. It's nice, yeah. Mad, isn't it? I should drive a van.
Because I was on the planner and I saw it because you'd already said you'd come here and do this and I was like, it's fucking Richard Wilson on ITVX. It's like your head just popped up on my TV. Man. I was like,
yeah, I like to get amongst the people. Like, I'm just like, you know, especially back, you know, good to get back. Yeah,
you're welcome.
You're welcome. It's funny when I came in and there were beautiful people by the door when I walked in. And we didn't really know, my wife and I came in, we didn't really know where we were going, and there was this wonderful, there you are, there. They were by the door, I walked in, and I went, right, and they went, we've come to see you. And I was like, I didn't even go, fuck off. What's wrong with you? It's Friday night, it's pissing me rain, stay in, what's up with you? No, I appreciate that. And then they showed us where to go. And I was so blown away by it, when I went upstairs, I went, was I rude? Because I didn't go, nice one, thank you. I kind of went, And then we went, no, I'm turning into that tosser. No pictures, no pictures. And I walked past a sign in their foreheads. You what, Dave?
Right, we didn't think that.
Oh, that's all right. I went upstairs and I had a wank. If anyone doesn't like swearing, by the way, I do apologise. Fucking.
I think we've got time for one last question. Literally, like a minute. I've got given the 5 minutes ago.
Oh, really?
Oh,
sorry.
The last thing I'm going to ask you is, it's the same thing that I asked Will, who's still there.
Good lad, Will.
We do watch other people, don't we? We do watch
other people. Will's one of the good ones. He gives a shit.
What's the one bit of advice you'd give to somebody in the audience that might be suffering with their mental health at the minute?
Go and have that coffee. Go and have that pint. I know there's that thing really where there's nothing sweeter than when the other person cancels plans because you don't really want to go and they're like, oh my god, it's delicious. When you're like, oh, I don't really fancy it, and you get that text, oh, I'm really sorry, I can't make it. Right? It is delicious now. stick to those plans. Go and have that chat. You don't have to turn up, you don't have to go straight in and go, hey, how are you? I'm really suffering with my mental health. You just the act of meeting up. And just having a chat, talking about any old bollocks, because the conversation will evolve, and it will get to a point where you will talk about stuff that's upsetting you and stuff you're struggling with. And also, it will be clunky as well when you do want to talk about that stuff. There's no good time to do it. There isn't. It's going to be weird. Sometimes you might just blurt it out, and you go, "I was going to top myself yesterday," just like that, and they'll go, "Oh, alright mate, I just need to know how much the beans were." Right? It's never going to be a good time to do it. Just got to do it. Because I'd rather you had a clunky, weird conversation with someone than did the thing that is just unimaginable. I don't want you to do that. I want everyone to know there's someone you can talk to. There's always people you can talk to. And you can message me on Instagram or wherever and just go, all right, this was happening, and we'll have a chat. And I think that's the advice I'd give you. If there's no advice, it's a difficult thing to give out. It just depends on the person. But I'd say have that coffee. Don't wait for someone else to arrange it either. Arrange it with them. If you haven't spoken to someone for a while, and then you go, it's been ages since I spoke to them. It's been too long now. It doesn't matter how long it's been. Message that person. Do you fancy a pint? Do you want to go and get some chips? Do you want to go for a walk around the park? Do you want to get a cup of coffee? Do you know what I mean? Do you want a bit of cheese and pineapple on a stick?
Or a
Vodafone. That's going to go on the merch, that is. Yeah, Vodafone. Like the sausage in Grange Hill, but like a Vodafone. My reference is a tight, babe, let me tell you. Reach out, talk to people, go and have that coffee, go and have a walk around the shops, connection is the key to improving your mental health, honestly. And don't look at, when you see all these things on social media, people crushing in the gym, and you're supposed to eat this and do that. Yeah, look after yourselves, but you don't have to live on lettuce leaves and exercise. Just sometimes, just have a pie and feel yourself. You'll feel better. I'll be my wife for it. Do that in your house, by the way. Don't do it in your house.
In the right order.
Yeah. Indoors, serving things. Out, yeah. Get it around the wrong way. But anyway, I was in the house. Why are you making it? Anyway, sorry about that. Apologies. That's smutty and rude, I think it was. Anyway.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you, mate.
That's amazing. Thanks so much.
Thanks everyone. Apologies.
Right, there's going to be a really quick sign about now because we've got the amazing Eddie Brett who's going to perform some songs for us. And yeah, here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. I don't know what to say. Here's Eddie. Where are you all there? You alright? Are you not talking?
Okay.
Yo.
Didn't even have to learn any songs, could have just like had a mic turn on and got clapped. Basically, I was going to start this. I don't know, because I knew the sort of thing that was going on, and it sort of coincided. Do we have any Busted fans in the house?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, you see, they got a number one album today. Well done, Busted. Yeah. Well, basically, when I was at college, I went to a musical theatre college. That was like, basically, I was at Harlow College first, doing drama, and then a girl I really liked was going to this musical theatre college, so when she told me she was leaving college, I was like, you can't leave college, and she was like, why not? She goes, all about me. So she was like, well, why don't you audition? So then I auditioned, and I ended up in a musical theatre college. So there I was doing musical theatre, and I was like, well, I never planned to do musical theatre in my life. Like, I was doing ballet every morning and stuff. It was a good crack, to be fair. I really enjoyed doing ballet. Things that you don't know that you're going to enjoy. But at the same time, I was in my own head. Like, I want to be a performer. I want to write songs. I want to be in a band and do all these sort of things. So I went up to my course director. The Busted thing comes into play is because she is... That wasn't a joke, by the way. It's always nice to get laughs. She was Miss McKenzie, and that's what I go to school for. I know it is the reason. So I went up to her, and I was like, oh, Miss, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I'm thinking all these things, and then all my mates are like doing their jobs. What am I supposed to do? She was like, Ed, you're having a moment. Go away, write a poem, and send me an email. So that's what we did. I was like, I'm having a midlife crisis at a tender age of just 18, and I had to ask myself, what is my dream, and what is a dream? Is it something to have and not to achieve, just like a faith to not know and to just believe? Oh, why? My creative mind couldn't be satisfied with an MBQ building and then an apprenticeship. 'Tis an honourable trade of respectable pay, and it's what most of my friends did, but I want more than this town, the glitz and the glamour, and I'm trying to carve a career from a dream. But where can I get an A-level in chance, diploma, what's even a BTEC based on a whim? And if I don't see it through, then I never quite know, and it's this sport that right now makes my life so hard. Will I work to great success? I thrive to be the best, and I won't accept that I wouldn't survive. This isn't a hobby, it's more than a pastime. It frustrates me when people say it looks fun. But calm down, mate. You're forgetting why you do it. If it looks easy, it's a job well done. So I pull up my striped socks, belt out the top notes, and I make my idols proud. Touch wood, if it doesn't work out, well, I just get a 9-to-5 and blend straight in with the crowd. So it's funny when you write a poem 13 years ago and you can look back and think, fucking hell, I achieved my dreams and now I've got a 9-to-5. So I've managed to like do everything. And then basically after that, I set up this band. And then I was watching TV one day, and there was a documentary on Boy George and Culture Club. Any Culture Club fans in the house? Come a comedian. Well, I didn't know that Boy George had a relationship with a drummer when they was on the road. And then when they weren't on the road, the drummer would go back to his wife and kids and pretend nothing ever happened. Whoa, that's some heavy stuff. And Boy George used to get really drunk, and he would go up to the house and be like, look, why don't you love me? And I was like, whoa, this is quite an intense story. So I was in there in my bedroom at my mum's house, and I wrote this song called Lovesick, which I was in this competition at the time called Jack Wills Unsigned, and got to the final and I asked my two mates, because one had an incredible voice, the other one sang, played the ukulele. I was like, boys, I really want to win this. Do you mind if you come along with me and sing it? And that's like, yeah, sure. And then I ended up singing this song. We won the Jack Wills final. We played at this big festival where Nina, this is when we was all younger, so it's quite funny now, like Nina Nesbitt, this is when she was a little kid as well. And he's like an acoustic, he's like Ed Sheeran, but he, bollocks, it won't come to me now. I always forget his name anyway. Someone else has gone on to do amazing things. We was all there. Ben Howard, I think I heard someone say. Yeah, he was there as well. But this is years and years ago, so it's really funny when you're like, oh yeah, shit, they've done some cool stuff. So we've done that, and then everyone was like, what's the name of your band? And we was like, we're not in a band. So then we set up a band, and we left college, started gigging, and then we was approached by Britain's Got Talent and Sony to say, look, you'd be really good on the show. Can you come on the show? And we was like, no, bollocks to that. We're not doing Britain's Got Talent. They kept coming back. Sadly, the Greg's got on the show. I was like, no, I'm not doing it. And then you go away and you can't help, this little seed gets planted in your head. And then eventually it was like, they said, we can do our own songs, our parents won't be in it, there's no sob story, and you'll probably get a record deal. And you tell that to like some 19, 18 year old boys, you're like, okay, cool. So we went on, but then the trouble is, when you do go on it, you're like, we have to be good now. So it's like anyone can say what they want about talent shows, but the minute you're on that stage, it's real. And it was super scary. But we did it, and it was amazing. And I sung this song. And I don't know how it's going to work with just one mic, but we're going to go for it. But yeah. I'm lovesick, and I'm sick of this love game. I'm tired of hearing I'm the one to blame. To impress him, I was crumbled like apple pie when you left my flat. Only wearing a goodbye in your bag, all my Ralph and tops on your feet were my brand new workout Reeboks. Turn a smile with them come to bed eyes, but all I could think of was all them pork pies. You get some telly night after night, and you just open up after every fight. Can we go on? Is there something to teach to all of the kids that I'm trying to reach? Romance is dead, it's on my grandparents' breach, cause they used to fall from cars on Brighton Beach. And all you know is a migraine scan, yeah. All you do is bring a migraine, you scan. I'm surely happier than Tommy Tank. Beginning to grey on my mind, and I can't keep living in style. Sometimes I feel I don't even try. Not that you even notice in me, flashing on any given possibility. Screaming out, give them Hercules sounds. When you look up, I'm still in my Calvin Klein. So let's just let bygones be bygones, and I just let my songs be my songs. Go down the bubble, watch the double love miss. Can you please attend this with a Hershey's kiss? A Hershey's kiss, and I don't know if anyone's been to America, but they're like little chocolate drops made by the chocolate company Hershey's. We were going on Blue Peter, and I was quite used to at this point for getting like a list of lyrics that I had to amend before going on television shows, and they didn't let us go on because it got cancelled. And I was like, look, where's, why, what's caused this? It's like, it's just not appropriate, the song's not appropriate for children, demographic of Blue Peter. I was like, fair enough. I knew it was like Tommy Tank in there and all these other things going on. I was like, look, fair play, I wouldn't want my kids to listen to it if I had them. But I do want a Blue Peter badge, but anyway. but they came back and there was this thing, the list said Hershey's Kiss. So we couldn't go on because of a Hershey's Kiss. And I was like, what is a little chocolate That's actually quite a cute bit in the song. And I Googled it. Now, this is the trouble. You can Google anything and find out something. But basically, for those that don't know, when you put your willy inside someone's bum and pull it out and there's a piece of poo on the end of it and then someone gives you a blowjob, that is known as a Hershey's Kiss. And it's because of that I didn't get a Boopita badge. Which, yeah, mental. It was like, out of everything that I don't mind holding my hands up and going like, yeah, no, I did write that. But it's like, I was just picturing a person thinking that I meant that. Like, anyway, that happened. Yes, then we went on Britain's Got Talent and we got through to the finals and then we got beaten by a dog, essentially. Because basically what happens, for those that don't know, I'm going to sit back, I'm a very weird, awkward position. When you go on these shows, you go to the audition and you're like, sweet, smashed it, got all the yeses and everything. But then, like a few weeks later, once everyone's done that bit, you get put in this big hall. Now, it doesn't matter how good you are, what you do, you walk in a big hall full of people knowing that not that many people are going through to the actual shows. It starts to get quite serious and it's like you're all sitting there and your name gets called and everyone starts clapping because something mentally just thinks the sooner your name gets called, the more likely you are to go through. But that wasn't the case, it's done at random, so it's like, why are people clapping and everyone getting called? Anyway, then you go in this room, you get put in like groups of five because that's who you're going in front of the judges are to make the decision. So when you're in this room, you start investigating on everyone else. You're like, what do you do? And someone said, I play the drums and I smash the drums and all this paint flicks up everywhere. I'm like, that sounds sick. Did you get yeses? I was like, yeah, I got yeses. Fantastic. And yeah, so we sung this song in the final. Oh, she's leaving. I can't have been that good. She's like, not another fucking song. We wrote this. This was the first song we wrote, co-wrote as a band, because like I said, essentially, at the start it was just me, and they were singing my songs, and then we got management and everything, and I was like, oh, this was before the show, by the way, we should do some co-writes. So we went in with the people that, do you remember, oh, I wish I was a punk rocker with flowers in my head. Come on, in 77 and 69, revolution was in the air, I was born to a dream. So they'd done that song, so we was there and was like, oh, this is really cool. And we wrote this song, and it was basically because like lawyers were starting to get involved, accountants and everything, and my mate who was in the band, his cousins, one's like in the music industry, others a footballer, so the mum was like, you need to make sure those contracts are all, I'll come with you. And we was like, look, chill out, mum, we've got this, we've done all this by ourselves so far, you can't just start getting involved now. And it, like, especially when you're younger, you think you know everything. In hindsight, really could have done with her to come with us. But so we was in this room writing this song about that process of like, just don't worry. And I think someone was talking about something earlier, but it just sort of resonated. But it's like, you're saying like the best thing in the world is to make people laugh. For you, it's like for someone to come and say like, that was brilliant, I listened to your podcast and it was fantastic, and then you're like, everything makes sense. When you write a song that resonates with people, it's literally my crack, and it's the thing that will go, it wasn't all going on Britain's Got Talent and winning, if you get dropped and that don't feel great, but you keep doing it for those moments that like someone says that thing. And the beauty of this song, which was quite a realisation, because I wrote it about, it's something people, because it's happened multiple times, basically like about their mums that passed away, and they listen to this song and it makes them feel like they're there. And I just found it really interesting, because it doesn't say mum anywhere in the song, but the fact that I wrote it to my mum, and then someone else hears, it's like this weird cosmic energy, bro, in the air, man. And it's like, wow, that's cool. So I just made my song a lot more depressing, but basically that's what this is about. It's called Honest, and I was so happy with this one, and it's one of the first songs we ever wrote together, and I loved it.
Tonight, I'm leaving for the future, and it's bright, being swept off my feet like a drifter.
myself, I'm not a para. You know how I feel, and that's apparent. I find a way to win on news, and I can't make it news, is that it? And I told you my moves will keep me honest. I'll be a good boy, that I promise. When I said that I won't leave, then I'll stay true. And I told you my moves will keep me honest. If there's a bus song, I'll be on it. When I told you I'm not leaving, you'll believe it when you see I'm back for you. Sitting warm by the fireplace, tears bloody embers, you'll see my face. I might have been myself, am I a parrot? You know how I feel, and that's a pattern. A final meter in our news, and I can make you choose, it's up to you. And I told you my moves will keep me honest. I'll be a good boy, that I promise. When I said that, when I told you I'm not leaving, you'll believe it when you see I'm back for you.
Yeah, I'm having fun. One more? Right, so I've got one more song, so we'll fast forward to the alcohol and depression part just to fit tie in nicely with the podcast. Everything was. I feel like I've got to say something now because everyone's been super honest. Honest. That was the name of the song, by the way. So the next song that came out was basically that those songs were supposed to get released, and we recorded them. And the head of Psycho, well, I say the head of Psycho, it was Simon Cowell, but he's
right hand person.
This for me. I think this is Germ Buddies. So they kept coming back saying, they kept adding stuff essentially. And when we started the band, it was just me with my guitar, ukulele, and three part harmonies. So the idea of adding anything to the song was scary for us, let alone what they were trying to do. And when it came back, the first song was like, I'm love sick, 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 boom, ching, ching. And we was like, whoa, bro, what is that? Like, we were so annoyed with them because it's quite scary when you've committed to a relationship. And then you find out who they actually are. You're like, whoa. So then we went in and done it because we was like, there's no way we're releasing that. And then we went in with Future Cut, who do all the Lily Allen stuff and all that side of things. And we was really happy with the way that they made it sound. It was pop, it was a bit indie, it was a little bit edgy, but not too much, so it still sell and all this stuff. We're like, sweet, we found it. The geezer went to America and he was listening to the Taco Bell advert, and it had this trumpet on it, a Mexican trumpet. So we get sent the latest version of our song, and at the beginning it was like, and he thought it was cool to put a Mexican trumpet on the song. And it's like, bro, do you see a Mexican trumpet player in our brand? Like, I'm in an R&B about drums and some bass guitar, and you've done that. And then what happened is they liked to show you who's boss. So then all of a sudden we weren't having a single out for at least a year. And you're like, oh, okay, meow. I was sitting in Nando's at the time when we found this out, because we had a black card, which was incredible. Free chicken for all. So we found out they weren't going to release those songs. And it was like, oh. And we was gigging everywhere, everyone was singing these songs, and I was downloading them off YouTube. It was super annoying, because I'm still poor. And it's just when someone comes up to you and they're like, oh, I literally listen to your song all day long, and it's like, it's not even out. And then they came up to us like the year after and was like, look, you're going on tour with Wally Murs and this is going to be the single, and it was called What a Night. Which was really bizarre because it's like, I enjoyed the song, I won't do the whole song, but basically it was, you made a mistake of letting me and my mate sing, and I should have known it all. And I can't be held responsible for getting naked in your swimming pool. What a night, you're right, and you're quite a sight for my sore eyes. Thinking she don't even realise your house is a joke. On that kind of blow, I'll buy them some slippers for nicely. I think your parents might like me. Long as I'm off to the party. So we released that song, you can get that one off. And then that went well in the charts. It went in midweek number 4, but basically we had Nelly, who was my little Porsche. We had Lucky, Daft Punk and Pharrell, which was the biggest song of the, like, that century. So I was like, cheers for that, mate. I think Pink was still in the mix with a song, and so each day we just see it like creep down the chart. We're like, please stay in, and it stayed in at number 9. On the, so we, yeah, got top 10 hit. Come on! So that was cool. And then basically I freaked out. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Just with the boys, the band and everything, getting, like, we was being known for something I wasn't quite happy with within myself. It just felt like it was so far removed from where we started. And then I sort of plunged into this, just escapism through alcohol. And it was never really a good idea. And I think it coincided because we got dropped, and all I ever wanted was my own space, because I was like ping pong between parents' houses growing up, because I didn't get on with step parents. It's all sweet now, but it's quite hard when you're growing up. You think you know everything, they still think they know everything. So all I wanted was my own space. Finally got to the point where I could get a mortgage, and then I got dropped from the record label, which meant my publishing deal didn't go through, which meant the mortgage didn't go through, which meant I was back to square one. And I was like, I just basically spent most of my money on getting drunk and going out. And then I was in the studio, like, years after, and the geezer went out to, he's playing with his song, and it had a voice on it, like a female vocal, just going, oh, by myself. And he went out to get a coffee. He's an Italian, so he makes it like proper, where they put it on the gas stove and it all bubbles up with the sugar and stuff. It's really quite incredible. So, when he went to say I'm going for a coffee, I knew he'd be gone for about 20 minutes. And so I sat there with my notepad, and it was just like, because I can't remember what has just happened. There'd been quite a few drunken offences that you regret instantly. I don't know if it was a driving related one or something, but those moments where you're just like, I can't, oh my word. Just gone out there, and I was just in this space when words just start coming together and making perfect sense at the right moment in time. This track in the background just kept going all by myself in like some blurred lull. And I picked up my pen in like, I was crying basically, but it's just when, got the fucking words. I'm not 16 anymore. I can't get pissed up for a score. I get loose with a contactless, wake up the sore head thinking, what have I done that for? And why can't I just have one? All too familiar scenes, waking up thinking, shit, what have I done? Because I blacked out and I can't remember a thing. My mate calls me to fill me in, oh no, not again. You know, no apology could quite find the words, because I'm a nice person at heart, so when I do stupid shit, it really hurts. I feel sick, my stomach sinks, I don't have a clue what I've done, and it's baffling, trapped in a wrapping of remorse. I turn the lights off, get back in bed and pretend that it's not happening. Is this all in my head? I'll clean my act up and start again. I can't wait for this weekend to end, I'm an addict. I'm not afraid to say, hold my hands up, pack it in, call it a day. I'm an addict. Oh shit, I thought this feels, he's all really engrossed as well. I'm an addict and I'm not afraid to say, hold my hands up, pack it in and call it a day. I can't continue with this anymore. I don't want to get too deep, but I'm done. Temptation's all around us and I think it's finally won. How can anyone love me when I can't even love myself? I'm not asking for sympathy, I'm just reaching out for help. And it was really bizarre because I was in that room by myself and literally the lyric just kept going, by myself. And somehow, this is the first time that I'd ever admitted that I needed help. And I said it to myself, well, I said it to the pen and paper and I had to look back at it and it was like, whoa. And this geezer's come in, happy as he's Larry, with his Italian coffee, going, what the fuck is happening here? Like, I've got the work and stuff. Yeah, and then I guess that was, for me, was like the first point of just sort of coming back to, because it is hard when you go through, lots of people have gone through it, but when you like get famous and you're doing all the record label thing and all your peers, some are super, like when I've done one of my first gigs, Sam Smith, James Arthur, we was all on the bill, like the newbies and stuff, and then you watch them go globally and everything, and your mate's houses get bigger around you, and you're like, shit, man, that'd be well cool. And it can be quite hard, especially, like art can be so unforgiving, but we still do it because it's what we love. But it's hard to come to terms with actually, like, normality again, because I remember, like, I got a job in a clothes shop not long after, because I thought, like, I don't come from a culture where you can't have a job. It's like literally, you drop from a record label next week. My mum was like, right, so what are you doing now? And so it was like that. And I remember I was in Ben Sherman folding clothes because it's what I did before. So I just felt like, oh, I've been there. And then I just constantly had people coming up to me going, oh, you're in the band, you're in the band. This is like when I was more famous. It wouldn't happen now. But yeah, it was just really bizarre. I don't know where I'm going with that story. But so I just didn't really have the moment to like check myself and go like this, yeah, but to come to terms with it really. So that's what the beauty of talking and all of that stuff can do. Look, I think we said that he was asking the question earlier, what is the thing, if you know you're struggling with your mental health, what is the thing that you can do? If you're aware of it, that's a beautiful place to be in, because I think it's when you're not aware that you're going through stuff, that's where it's quite scary, because that's madness, man, because you're doing stuff, you're reacting and you're just not even aware of things going on. So knowing that you're going through something is almost like, it's like a thumbs up moment, because you can actually look at it and go, right, we can do something about this, and then take actions. Whereas when you don't know about it, that's when it's very dangerous. And that's when we have to look out for other people. And you're standing there, I think this is over now, isn't it? Yeah, why not?
I'm sorry, but yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What I will say is, so prior to this gig, me and Eddie recorded the podcast. We sat down for about, an hour and a half, was it, I think?
Yeah.
And just had a chat. It's two bikes, so I'm going to put that out after this, so please listen to it. It's a lovely chat, and yeah,
you're amazing,
it's amazing. Can I just quickly get all three of you up here just to say a big thank you, and like it's been an amazing evening. I hope you've all enjoyed yourself. So for one last time, can I get a round of applause for Eddie, for Will. Thank you, Rich. Can you get a lovely shout out to me, Nicole? Thank you so much, Nicole. Thank you so much for supporting me. Good, mate. So, one last thing. Thank you for coming. And we're going to go to Rev's Tequila for a few drinks if you fancy joining us. Well, yeah, come on, yeah. Party! I don't drink, so party! Yeah, please feel free to come along. We've booked a room there. I'd love to have a chat with you all and just say thanks for coming. So, I'm going to bugger off now. Thank you very much.
21 free months.